Since there are two courses today, there's an English course and a Thai course present today. There's some Thai people that joined the English course. They feel like they're bored of listening to Thai. They want to hear it in English now. He's asking the Thai people to lift their hands. He's asking them to be more diligent than they are. Try to learn and study the way of practice of the Dhamma, and then once we understand the principles, then go and practice. We do this for ourselves, not for anybody else. We study the Dhamma practice so that we can learn to separate our mind or lift our mind out of suffering. And what are the things that are suffering? It is this body and this mind that are suffering, or rupa nama, all these components of body of mind that comprise what we call us. Everything else is just outside of that. But to be able to release from suffering, we have to be able to release from this body and this mind, nothing else, not the outside world. See if we think that we love other things more than ourselves, but we don't. We love them because they're ours. We love the wife because it's our wife. We love the kids because it's our wife. We love the house because it's our house. It's us that we love. It's us that we're attached to. We're attached to ourselves. But take a look and see that this body and mind are things that are changing all the time. All the thoughts that go on in the heart, in the mind, are changing all the time. The body is always changing. Happiness or unhappiness, always changing. The feelings changing. And we seem to be so dependent on these things that are changing all the time. But we really can't depend on them. We can't rely on things that are changing all the time. We really can't. And as attached to as we are to these things, we can't attach for it to for long, because eventually it's all going to die. Our lives, we're so dependent on the world and other people. Even this body we're so reliant on. We think it has to stay young, it has to stay healthy. Because we're attached to these things, when we're attached to these things, we're certainly going to be disappointed at some point. An enlightened being, an arahant, hasn't practiced to make his mind peaceful. He has practiced to make his mind smart, because he understands the truth of the body and mind. And once you understand the truth of the body and mind, then you understand the truth of the world. Because once you're not attached to the body and mind, then you're not attached to anything at all in the world. And once you're no longer attached, there will be no more suffering. The body will get old. The body won't suffer. The body ages and dies. The mind will not suffer. The body's dying. There's no attachment to the body, then we don't suffer because of it. And if the mind has wisdom and sees all the changing feelings and emotions in the heart, sees that everything is temporary, see that everything just comes and goes, when happiness comes, then there isn't any sort of interest or elation in it. It doesn't get too lost in the happiness, because the happiness is just going to go away. And if unhappiness comes up, don't meddle or concern with it much either, because it's just another thing that's going to come and go away. No attachment. See, even if we want to feel happy, then we're suffering immediately. Every time we're wanting, we have suffering, even if it's wanting to be happy. But once the heart is truly smart, there'll be no more wanting that arises in the heart, because every time there's wanting, there's suffering. Even if we want something and then we get it, the happiness that comes from getting what we want is extremely fleeting and temporary. That happiness will fall away. But an arahant, an enlightened person, will their minds will not waver when anything arises. That's true peace. The peace of samatha is just a very superficial type of peace. We're able to put our mind into a comfortable place for a short period of time, and then it comes out and we suffer again. But let's practice the wisdom way so that we will have a more permanent type of peace from right understanding. See, we don't have to be afraid of suffering, because suffering is temporary. When we have suffering in our life and our mind wavers and is so worried about this suffering, it wants it to go away. And it does this because it's not smart. It thinks that this suffering could be permanent. But if the heart knows that this is just a temporary phenomenon, it won't meddle and it won't struggle with regards to the situation. Once we're enlightenment, if we practice strongly enough, the suffering won't even happen in our heart from the beginning in any situation. So for an arahant, or for a smart one, a wise one, when the happiness goes away or a good situation goes away, there isn't sadness. And when a bad situation finally goes away, it doesn't really matter. There isn't any sort of relief. The heart has a unwavering peace. There is nothing that can be imagined or formulated. We can't the enlightened being isn't able to fabricate any suffering in their lives as the rest of us do. The rest of us are slaves to our own wanting. But once we no longer have attachment and we have wisdom, we will reach true freedom, true liberation, because there isn't anything in the world or in this body and mind that has any influence on the heart anymore. It's free from absolutely everything. Doesn't matter what happens, the heart will not waver. Even if there's going to be death immediately, even if death is immediately happening right now, the wise mind will feel happy and cheerful and peaceful. There'll be no effect, because such a mind has realized nirvana. When there is no more wanting, nirvana, there'll be no more wanting. And when there is no more wanting, there's pure bliss, a happiness that's indescribable or incomparable to any other happiness, because there is a happiness that has no reliance on anything in the world. Now, arahants are able to have happiness. They're also able to have equanimity, but they're not able to have unhappiness or suffering. There's no suffering. There's just happiness, a happy peace that rests permanently in the heart as a result of true wisdom. Even if the world completely gets destroyed, if Russia and America end up in a big world war, there's no pain for the Arahant whatsoever. Now, of course, if the body gets hurt, the body can feel pain, but the heart doesn't feel pain along with it. So before we can be smart like this, we have to be able to practice to make the mind in a state where it is ready to walk the path of wisdom. And there are two ways to practice. One is samatha, and the other is vipassana. We practice samatha so that the mind can be in a comfortable state of peace. We can practice samatha so that the mind has energy and power and has some stability in its ability to observe phenomena. Actually, when we practice samatha, there are two types of samatha. One type of samatha is to make the mind peaceful. The other type of samatha is to make the mind this stable observer. And only the second type is the one that is ready to walk the path of wisdom. See, if the body is going to be strong, we need to rest this body in order for it to be strong and have energy, right? So similarly, the mind has to rest in order to have energy as well. And so this rest is our samatha practice, where we pick a meditation object and we keep our mind with this object. The mind gets a rest and it gets energy. Now the second type of samatha is to achieve this stable observer, which is able to separate out as an observer of phenomena and not be slipping down into any of them. It releases itself from happiness, unhappiness, good and bad mental states, and all phenomena. So it is the observer, not the meddler. It doesn't get such a stable mind observer, doesn't get lost in the thoughts that arise, in the feelings that arise. It sees the body, and it sees, and it hears, and it smells, and it tastes, and it makes contact with the body in a way that it doesn't get lost in any of these things. The mind and whatever object of consciousness is there are separate from each other. And it has the opportunity to see the three characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and non-self of all phenomena. And to be able to be to that place where it sees these three characteristics, which is wisdom, the mind has to separate out as the separate observer first, to be able to see these things happening without meddling with them. So there are two ways we can practice. Practice our samadhi is one can be a peaceful way, where we stay with an object to get some energy, and the other way is to allow the mind to be the observer of all phenomena and become the separate observer. This is the one we need for our wisdom practice. Now, some people are very good at the first type of samatha, where they're able to reach states of peace. They may be so good at it that they arrive into the jhana absorption levels, and when they come out, they're able to be the separate observer automatically with a lot of energy. But most people, even in the Buddha's time, never mind these days, were not able to do this practice. of jhana. So we have to rely on the other way. In the Buddha's time, there were a lot of people that were already sages, hermits, ascetics that lived in the forest and practiced these deep levels of concentration. So when the Buddha taught these people, he would teach them to do their jhana first and then use it for wisdom. But for those that weren't practicing these deep levels of concentration, the Buddha didn't teach them to do it. He was able to teach them other ways to walk the path of wisdom. So in the remaining 10 minutes, he's going to teach us the useful type of samadhi. First, we have to be able to pick the right object for us. What object makes us happy? Each person is different. We have to see within ourselves. When Longpa was young, he was happy watching the breath ever since he was a young boy. So whenever he wanted to do samatha practice, he would watch his in and out breath. So if the mind is happy with its object, it'll be peaceful there. So if it's happy with the breath, it'll be peaceful there. If we're happy with the mantra, we can get peaceful with the mantra. If we move the body and feel happy moving the body, then we'll be able to reach a state of peace from that. Right? The proximate cause of samadhi or gaining a state of peace is happiness or feeling content. So the mind is always wanting happiness. We watch a movie because we want to feel happy. We don't watch a movie because we want to feel terrible. The mind wants happiness. And we're watching the movie, and then after a little while, it's a lousy movie. We feel bored. We don't feel happy with the movie anymore. Maybe I'll go grab something to eat. I want to eat something tasty. Why do I want to do that? Because the mind is searching for happiness. It doesn't want to suffer. So the mind is always hungry for happiness, but it's never fulfilled. It's never full. And so it's looking here and there for happiness all the time. The mind moves out to the eyes to see, to try and see something that can make it happy, or go out to hear something that's going to make it happy, or a taste or a touch, something the body can feel to make it feel happy. Like, for example, it's really hot outside, and we go into an air-conditioned room so that the body can feel nice and comfortable. Or when it's really cold, we put on a heater so that the body can feel happy and comfortable. If the body's comfortable, then we can feel happy. So our mind is running towards things that can make us happy all the time. If we're watching something and it's not happy enough, then we listen to something like music. If that's not happy enough, not fulfilling enough, then maybe we'll get something to eat that's tasty. If then we're not happy enough, then we'll go talk to a friend and see if that'll be fun and make us feel happy. But we're never fulfilled. The mind is not peaceful. It's always searching for happiness. So let's find a meditation object that when we are observing it, we feel comfortable and happy. Said most people's minds went out the door. Half the room's minds went out that door when the monk was walking in. So that must mean that you're not happy listening to the Dhamma. You have to go try and find happiness over there in the corner, whatever the monk's doing. See, the mind is always happy, is always looking for happiness in different places because it's never fulfilled. Sometimes it just thinks to itself looking to try and be happy from its thoughts, but it never fully finds happiness from any of the senses or the thoughts, so it just keeps running around and around and around. So let's find a meditation object that we're comfortable with, content with, happy with, and let's be with it often. For example, the breath. If we can be aware of the breath. And feel happy with it. Then we should watch the breath. Now most people do it. Most people do this wrongly. When we think of watching the breath, then all of a sudden we change our posture. We think that sitting in a comfortable way, that's not practicing meditation. Meditation has to be practiced with the arms folded and legs folded. That's not right. We're sitting already. We think that the mind, the body has to be in a particular posture or to sit, or a particular posture of walking in order to call it meditation. We have to walk in a very strange and slow way, put the arms like this, the legs have to open, like the legs have to lift like this and go just this far. Some centers only let you walk just a tiny little steps, and each step takes so long. The reason they make you walk so short isn't because that's the right way to meditate. It's because there's too many people meditating together. You're going to bump into them. So you have to walk really, really small steps. Okay, so let's not control or interfere with just the natural sitting of the body or walking of the body. If we're going to watch the in and out breath or have mindfulness of it, right now, aren't we already breathing? Yeah, we're already breathing, right? So let's see this body is breathing. Let's observe that. Just this. For the body, if we're walking, just be able to feel that the body's walking. So let's not change or adapt the mind, put it into any particular state when we're about to meditate, and let's not adapt or try to change the body or control it in any way either. It's even more important that we don't force the mind into any particular state. But usually when we sit in a straight posture like this, we'll not only control the body, but we'll be controlling the mind as well. Some of us are really tight and really stressed. Some people try to make the mind peaceful right away. They move their mind way down into a lull and then fall asleep. Right? So this is phony. This isn't the real deal. This is just really stress and forcing and trying. So the mind has to be happy and comfortable. So just smile. Let's see. Let's have a nice, sweet smile so that it's like a flower is in our heart, blossoming. Right? Like we have a blossoming flower in our heart. Can we do this? So then use this type of mind, this type of heart, to notice the body sitting and breathing. With a happy heart, we can see the body breathing. See, it only takes a moment with this type of happiness. With this type of happiness, it only takes a moment to enter samadhi or enter deep concentration. He's doing it to show us. Yeah. Little example for us. If our mind is truly happy with the objects that it's with, and use this happy mind watching this object that we're happy with. A happy mind with a happy object, and we'll be able to achieve this nice state of comfort and peace for a nice rest, for a nice samatha practice. It won't take long at all to find a place of peace. If we have an object that isn't a happy object, then we won't be peaceful. And if we're using an object, if our mind isn't happy, then we won't reach a state of peace either. Okay, so this is the secret. The object has to be happy, our heart has to be happy. This isn't a hard thing to do. And this is useful, this practice is useful for a rest, to give us energy. Right? Sometimes we're at work and we have to talk to customers and we get stressed. Right? We may have some concentration when we're talking to our customers because we're not allowed to get lost in our thoughts, right? But we're stressed. We're not happy because the object of meditation there, which is our customer, isn't a happy object, right? So we won't feel peaceful. We're going to feel stressed. Now, somebody that's a real expert in samatha will be an expert in entering samatha, will be an expert in staying in samatha as long as we desire, or as long as we need to. Also, a real expert is one who's able to practice vipassana within their state of samadhi, within their state of peace, actually able to practice wisdom within there. And then a true expert of samadhi also is able to exit their samadhi appropriately, properly, and at will. Sort of like a plane has to take off and a plane has to land. There's a certain technique to it. If we come out or go into it wrongly, it can create some problems, or we may be stuck in this state of samadhi even after we come out of it. We may not be able to shake it away. So let's not think this is a difficult subject. We just have to be happy first, smile. Are we smiling yet? Now, some of us are smiling, but our hearts are still stressed. Right? Our hearts have to be happy too. Smile and have a happy heart. So let's think like we have a rose in our heart, seeing it blooming, blossoming. And it doesn't matter if we get peaceful or not. Let's just forget about that idea. Let's not try to get anywhere in our samatha practice. Let's not try to get anywhere. Let's just be happy with the meditation object and the mind will become peaceful on its own. Okay, so it's time now for breakfast. So let's try to practice what he was teaching just for 10 or 15 minutes every day. It won't take long and we'll become experts at this.